first met, I was just a young skinny punk. Then I put on a voice for Uncle Frankie. You might have thought I was drunk, and I might have got you swooning when I got Sharon Moonstruck. Holly and I might have made you moony when she was dead, and I will. I was high, that's why.
This is the most professional opening we've had so far. Yeah. And we just spent 10 minutes trying to figure out the Bluetooth headphones. So, yes.
Who wants to do the introductions?
Well, I guess I'll just go ahead. Welcome to The Good, The Pod, and The Ugly, Cage Uncaged. Thomas, would you care to explain the format of the show?
Yeah, I like my version better. To quote our movie coming up, Cage and Cage, the Clint Eastwood podcast that in season 4 reviews select films of Nicolas Cage. The format of the show is that we've agreed to a list of 20 Cage movies. Each week we cover a 2-movie pairing that we pitched and decided upon the week before, resulting in a dwindling list of options until we're left with Lord of War and Left Behind.
Which is this week.
So this is Thomas.
Oh, I'm Jack.
And I'm Ken, and this is a really exciting episode because it is our first live recording. We are in Tubby Tony's in Gresham. Tubby Tony's, big fan of the show, located in the East Side Industrial Park, Unit D11. It's through the tattoo shop, through the back, home of Tubby Tony's Endless Tarpaulin Roof. Yeah, I think some people in the audience here were expecting to watch some basketball. So, how's everybody doing?
I was not warned about this bit beforehand. Shout out to Tubby Tony's for letting me borrow one of their used greasy pizza napkins to write my notes on.
Oh, the Tubby Tony's, they're nachos. Officially, their slogan is, Tubby Tony's are nachos, they will fuck you up. They come fully loaded, and then lightly loaded, and then super loaded. There's always a line at the bathroom at the tattoo shop.
All right.
This week we have Left Behind and Lord of War, which was Thomas's pairing.
And the theme was movies that start with L, right?
Yeah. What was your pitch again, Thomas?
Yeah, I think there was maybe an alphabetical pairing, but also I guess the Lord of War and the Lord of Peace. I just really wanted to do Left Behind, and I think I figured out a way of being forcing you two to let me talk for about an hour and a half about the book series. Oh,
Cannot wait.
And Lord of War.
Oh, my gosh. Guys, I'm sorry. I said, I know in the group chat, I said that I hated you for having me watch Lord of War.
Yeah.
I think that was a little strong. I don't hate anybody, of course.
Right.
I realized in season 3 that you guys had, after Unforgiven, you had all the 80s movies.
Yeah, we went through some tough ones.
And probably Child Protective Services should have been called. I guess to crib a line from Pilot Rayford Steele from the novel Left Behind, except for heaven, there's no place I'd rather be. I appreciate being on the show, guys.
Okay.
Wow, that's great.
Great.
So you liked Lord of War then?
No, fuck you guys. of all the mid-aught mediocre Cage movies we could have done, and I would have loved to have done Ghost Rider, Ghost Rider 2. Like, this is,
I had Ghost Rider 2 on my list.
Yeah,
I had Lord of War on my list. True. Because I hadn't seen it before.
Which you have.
Now I have.
No, you had before then.
I did?
Yeah. This is a rewatch for you. I'm not gaslighting you. Either a Mandela effect thing happened or I'm just straight up wrong. But I swear to God, we have had full conversations about this movie before. Like years ago.
Well, maybe we could all revisit it in season 5 and pretend we haven't watched it. And Thomas, you could have the same Same result.
Reaction?
Yes.
I thought it, yeah, for some reason I thought it was Weatherman in my head. Lord of War, Nicolas Cage had a bow and arrow like in a suit on the cover, but no, this is a different film. From 2005, though.
Wait, are we starting with Lord of War then, or?
Yeah, it's the first one okay. in the sequence, right?
Sure.
So
that's the one we watched first.
Yeah.
So we usually try and spread these out a little bit, these movies, but we watched both of these movies back-to-back yesterday.
Literally back-to-back. Break in between.
I prefaced both of these.
You guys had two televisions set up.
Yes.
It's like you were about a duel. Take some paces.
Yes.
Back-to-back.
And then
it was a little bit like Requiem for a Dream, but more PG.
Yes.
Requiem for a Dream, and this would be a great double feature. Jared Leto addiction movies.
Oh, you know what? That's good.
Thanks. Just thought of that.
Thomas, do you have a pun for our Jared Leto podcast we're going to do?
What do you mean?
I mean a title.
Why would I have... I don't understand what's a pun. No. Do you guys have... No, I have no ideas.
No, I'm not a big Jared Leto fan. I don't know.
I have some cool stats, though, about this and other films that we've seen of Nicolas Cage.
Leto, my so far, ego.
That's terrible.
Oh, Leto, my ego? Ego was actually mine.
Oh, okay.
because I guess I'm looking at my notes now, and I realize that this is the second film that we had starring a famous musician in a lead role or a supporting role. First being Cher, and the second one being Leto of 30 Seconds to Mars.
Oh, that's true.
And then I wrote, yeah, Leto, my ego is whatever we, it was a former podcast we did. This is also the second film which Nick Cage reads a newspaper while his adversary is on screen.
So
whenever we get to that really kick-ass, like there are a few good scenes in this, and one of them is, shit. Okay, we did actually cover this. We did it in our podcast, Hawk Block, where we talk about Hawk. But we'll get back to that, I guess. And this is the third film with Nicolas Cage where Cage can see a ghost. The others being City of Angels, Bringing Out the Dead, and The Breakdancer and Bad Lieutenant.
And he was also in Pay the Ghost, where he has to pay a ghost, which we are not covering on this podcast.
No, because we don't believe in paying people who are dead. Because we have enough bills with people who are
alive. I didn't do any research on this, really, guys.
Okay,
I know he was a producer on the film.
Jack did a ton.
I did a ton of research, meaning I browsed the IMDb trivia. Oh my god, the IMDb mobile website changed their formatting and the look of it completely. It took me so long to get to the trivia page. It was so confusing.
Don't you just type in Lord of War trivia and then it comes up on the Google search?
Oh shit, I should have done that.
Anyway, what do you have for us?
So, they worked with actual gunrunners. Oh, if you don't know, the movie's about weapons stealing and smuggling and stuff.
Yes.
They worked with actual gunrunners, and the tanks lined up for sale in that one scene where they're selling tanks were real. And the AK-47s that they used were not props because it was cheaper to get real AK-47s.
Yeah,
I mean, those tanks, they also had to let NATO know whenever they had them.
Yes, because they thought that they might accidentally start a real war because of satellite images and stuff.
Huh.
And those tanks were on loan from like an arms dealer. Those tanks they only had for so long before they had to... I think they had them for shooting like for only a few months because they were going to be used in a war.
Yeah.
Or be used, given to a nation for use in a war.
That's exactly what happened in the 1979... film Stalker by Tarkovsky. The tanks that they used in that movie. Yuri Orlov, played by Nicolas Cage, is based on five different arms dealers, but mainly Victor Bout, a former Soviet officer.
It's endorsed by Amnesty International.
Is it? What?
It's, yeah, we had two movies that were, I would call, I guess both of these movies are message movies at the end of the day.
Yeah. Monica Bellucci was supposed to be in it.
Who? Oh, as then, the wife?
Yeah, as the wife, but then she wasn't.
Okay. That would be very tough for her to have been from New York, even little Odessa.
For sure. accent. Well, it would have been tough for any of the actors in this to believably be from Little Odessa. Let's get into it. Let's get into Lord of War.
So if you haven't seen Lord of War, it's from writer-director Andrew Niccol, who probably is most famous for writing The Truman Show.
And he directed the Gattaca.
The right? Gattaca, also with Ethan Hawke. And then he did another movie with Ethan Hawke about a drone pilot. The last movie he directed was the In Time movie with podcast favorite Justin Timberlake.
Woo!
Which was famously claimed to have been stolen from an idea of Harlan Ellison. And he eventually
right.
dropped the lawsuit after seeing the movie. But also there's a short film in the 80s that's the exact same plot. So
Wait. Zoolander? Wait.
Sorry.
Bret Easton Ellison? Is that who you said?
No, Harlan Ellison.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Harlan Ellison, the sci-fi writer.
Isn't okay. Harlan Ellison
yes, they're,
dead,
they're, though? They're yeah, Harlan Ellison is dead, RIP, but both authors are thoroughly obnoxious as themselves, regardless of their literary skills.
Yeah, Harlan Ellison wrote some pretty scary stuff.
Oh, Harlan Ellison was the best. Ooh. Famously sued James Cameron and Galen Hurd for Terminator.
I forgot about
his
that.
His name is on the credits now.
Well, didn't he also do the screenplay that was not used, that was going to be used for Kubrick, but not used for Spielberg AI AI, right?
I'm not aware of that. I hadn't heard that before.
I think he adapted. We'll have to look that up.
Yeah. Anyway, but, I digress. This movie though stars Nicolas Cage as a guy from New York whose family is from the Ukraine, but they pretend to be Jews. It opens up with him talking to the camera, addressing the camera, and he has a lot of narration as the story goes along. And it feels like he wants to make this a Martin Scorsese type story.
Oh yeah, this is just Goodfellas. But, if you haven't seen it, it's Goodfellas.
It's like Goodfellas with all the zip taken out of the narrative.
For sure.
I actually like the early part of the story where he's going through how he became an arms dealer.
This movie is famous for the opening, which is great, which is him talking to the camera about like
on a field of
spent
bullet shells.
Yeah, and he's like, "How do we arm the other 11 people?" And then there's a great opening credit scene of a bullet, you know, going through the factory and stuff. And the rest of the movie is not as good as the opening, I think. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, so that's. Do we have any Google reviews?
Yeah. And I love this movie. I think it's a great movie despite all its faults. I really, really love it. It is undeniably ridiculous, though.
Instead of watching the two movies back to back, last night I ended up watching Eyes Wide Shut. And one thing that I come back to on this film is that there's not really like ever, there might be like almost a scene throughout the whole movie. They're just constantly moving and like just skipping over anything that would explain what's going on or develop the. I did not like this film.
There's a lot of frustration early on where he says, "Oh, he figures out he sells his first gun, an Uzi, in the 80s, and then he figures out that's a way to make money, and then it jumps to him in another country, selling
right.
a slightly larger arms deal."
Exactly,
if Martin Scorsese had made this movie, the information would have been there, and the movie still would have been the same length, and it would have had twice as much information.
Yeah,
and really, yeah, I was very frustrated with the lack of context because it just jumped from, it was like somebody recounting a book and just going over the big parts. But the connective stuff, it just isn't there.
It's totally like, I sold my first Uzi, then I knew how to sell an Uzi. And then, yeah, the next time you see him, he's like meeting like world leaders and stuff. And it's like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And that happens throughout the entire movie. That never slows down. He is constantly jumping from place to place. And you have no real idea like what his status is in the world at any given time. He's suddenly like super rich. But then he's saying that he's, like, trying to be super rich. He's pretending to.
And then he...
It's really confusing.
He fakes a girl from his neighborhood who's a supermodel. He fakes her coming out for a photo shoot, rents out the whole hotel, cancels the photo shoot, and then they hook up. And then suddenly she's his wife, and then they have
kids. It literally cuts to them getting married. It's so funny.
Yeah, it cut... It cuts from the plane that he's had to rent with wet paint on it, which is a callback to earlier whenever Jared Leto's character, who's his brother, and him ward off the first appearance of Ethan Hawke, who, like, in Interpol knows how to, like, he's in fighter jets. He's on the
he's like the James Bond of customs.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, you get that wet paint, and then all of a sudden you're cutting to the two of them looking out over a cityscape, Cage and I guess obligatory female model.
Yeah, yeah.
Not Cage and Ethan Hawke. They don't like each other. Looking out over the cityscape, and you think maybe they're together, like they've been just already started a family, but no, it's their wedding.
Like, yeah,
they pull back. And for some reason, during their wedding, they had a moment where they both were looking out a picture window while everybody was watching them watch out a picture window. It's not very good.
It's hilarious, though. Like, that's the reason that I love this movie, is because there are some scenes like the one you just referenced where they have to repaint the name of the ship in time.
That's a good sequence.
Are great, like, are really incredible. And then there are sequences that literally, like, cut years and years out of the story where you really want things to have been explained. And yeah, it's a really interesting mix of really good and really stupid.
Okay, that should be on the poster.
Yeah.
Jared Leto, early on in the story, is Cage's partner, and then he gets a conscience and he can't do it anymore, so he goes back to cooking in the family restaurant. Also disappears when they get paid a bunch of cocaine. And then he tracks him down to someplace in the Mediterranean, and I thought this was very funny. He, out of cocaine on a table, he made the shape of the Ukraine because he wants to go back there someday.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Jared Leto's pretty good when he's supposed to be all hopped up on coke. I really believed him as a cokehead.
For sure.
And then when he shows up clean and sober later, he is actually still exactly the same. And Ethan Hawke plays the guy. He has like three scenes where he pops up, and the first two, Nicolas Cage fakes some papers or paints the ship, and he's like, "Oh, I'm going to get you, Nicolas Cage. I'm too honest to make up some fake evidence, even though I know you're going to kill hundreds of thousands of people with your guns. I'm still the one guy who can't be bought."
Right. But that is the thing about this movie, is I really feel like it genuinely does call into question, like, the actual moral conflict of it, of Nicolas Cage's character being like, well, people are going to kill each other no matter what I do. Like, I'm just the middleman. And I don't know. I think that's really great. I think the conflict between those two characters is really interesting.
And then there's the conflict with Leto. And then there's the conflict with his wife, who, as soon as they hook up, she's like, I don't want to know. And he is like, she doesn't want to know. She just accepts it and doesn't ask questions.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because it does an about face at the end of the movie when it becomes convenient for her. But that's also never called into question. I wrote in my notes, they got married quickly.
That's the thing with these Goodfellas clones, is they always have to have like the obligatory like wife and family character. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's really badly done in this one, for
yeah,
sure.
Like, Cage tells Hawke during the interrogation scene, "I like you, Jack." Well, maybe not, but I understand you. And yeah, no, that is crap. Like, as far as women, I think that they're all pretty much whores, except for.
Can I quote you on that?
We're just going to pull that bit of audio out.
All women are treated like prostitutes.
In this movie.
I mean, there are literal prostitutes. Everybody that Leto's character brings home is seemingly a prostitute.
Right. Besides Nicolas Cage's mom, the only female character that isn't a prostitute is his wife, and her entire character is like
kind of a prostitute.
Literally just wants money, and he says that. He's like, she doesn't care what I do as long as I, you know, give her diamond earrings.
And speaking to the no context, there's a part in the movie where he's wooing her and he's saying he doesn't have money. But he's just saying that because we never actually see him hustling.
Yeah.
There's never any hustle or flop sweat or, oh shit, if I don't get this taken care of, there's going to be trouble. He just says it in the narration. I had to paint the plane and pretend it was my own company. But you never really see him in financial trouble.
No.
Very annoying. The cold.
Yeah.
The-
and I mean, if we're going to skip over the plot, then I mean, yeah, it's a weird, like, it's supposed to be a period piece, but there's only like two touch points that I really ever find that are, that really mention anything that's going on. Like, their fashion doesn't change, right? It's not like.
And Cage doesn't really change same. Other than his sideburns.
Any scene that you open up, and like anywhere you would skip around on this DVD, or actually, I had the Blu-ray. Ooh. And when you put the Blu-ray in, it actually welcomes you to, it says, "Welcome to your Blu-ray from Lionsgate." And it tells you how to use your Blu-ray. It's trippy. But if you were to somehow just put it on random, you have no idea where in time you were based off of the setting, based off of what people were wearing, right, how people acted, aside from two instances. One's the OJ trial.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cold War. The other is somebody mentions the Lord of War mentions that the 2000 election was stolen.
Oh, no, there's also that Christmas where the Soviet Union falls apart.
Oh, true, true. That's right. Where he negates his son being able to walk because he's so excited about
it. Oh, yeah. That is so funny.
Yeah.
No, everyone dresses like it's 2004 whenever this movie came out, and yeah, all the cars are the same.
Oh, completely.
It makes zero effort. It's almost like Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Yeah.
The level of effort it takes.
There's also a through line with Ian Holm, RIP, who was introduced as one of the great arms dealers, and then as Cage. And he dismisses Cage, and then later on in the movie, after the Cold War, Cage has an uncle in the Soviet Union or the Ukraine, and he gets a bunch of shit. And
Uncle Ivanvich or something.
Yeah, who's a lush. And then Ian Holm tries to get it muscle in, and then Cage's uncle gets blown up in a car, which is telegraphed at least a mile away.
Oh my god, that scene like, is so funny.
Thank you for your car, nephew.
Even like, my enemy was car. Jealous of my new car.
He was looking at it.
It was definitely the hot shots. Yes. For Dune.
Yes. For sure.
Moment.
Yeah.
Like, I put everything you ever wanted in that car, uncle.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, look in the glove box of your new car that I got you. There's some cigarettes in there for you.
Oh, I love my new car.
And the car is in frame the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you didn't know it was going to blow up.
So I guess Ian Holmes is there three times, which... Shit, we should do an Ian Holmes podcast. I don't have the Ian Holmes alone, maybe.
Holmes for the holidays?
Look, Bilbo Baggins, Fifth Element, Kafka with Soderbergh, Naked Lunch. I mean, this guy's just, he's not ever really a leading role, but he's just in all these amazing films.
Yeah, he's everywhere. Yeah, one of the great character actors.
Yeah, love him.
But yeah, he's initially, whenever we're back in the 80s, maybe after Cage sells his first Uzi, he shows up and he basically tells Cage, like, you're out of your league.
Yeah.
Then he shows up there to blow up the uncle after the fall of the Soviet Union. And then he'll show up again whenever we have, like, the third main part of where this movie takes place, which is Africa.
Yeah.
Which is
Liberia.
Liberia, yep.
Is that the best part of the movie? Am I alone in thinking that?
No, that's great. I mean, those two actors, it's Eamon Walker,
mm-hmm,
and the guy who plays his son are just amazing.
Yeah. They're so great. They elevate the movie.
They bring a level of menace that the rest of the movie doesn't really have. Unhinged menace.
And the stuff about the, when he tries to sell him the, it's a 357 Magnum, right?
Yeah.
And he uses it. And Cage is like, why'd you do that? But then he's like, I can't sell you a used gun. And it's almost like a moment of Cage having, like his character having, like...
A conscience?
A conscience. But then he immediately snaps back to salesman mode. which is, I think, the mark of a really great Nicolas Cage performance, which we haven't really talked about, but he's really great in this, I think. I don't think another actor could have probably pulled off this role that well. What do you think?
No, I agree. Maybe Ray Liotta.
Yeah. I mean, I think you get some of Scorsese's cast, and they might have been able to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is, speaking of the OJ trial, when he goes to that shitty hotel in Monrovia, and those two guys at the front desk are watching the OJ trial, and the one guy says, when I go to America, I won't live in Brentwood.
Yeah.
Probably the funniest part of the movie.
But that's actual, that's like, okay, if in America this shit happens every day, where if you have enough money you can get away with murder, it's like, well... You know,
and we get into a weird part of the movie where there's some stuff in movies where it's just character and color to fill out the margins of the world, but they bring up AIDS in Africa, and Cage is presented with two prostitutes when he goes to the hotel, and he declines their offer because of AIDS.
Right.
It never really goes anywhere, does it?
No, they said that there's no, they said the warlord. So the reason why this movie is called Lord of War, which I think is actually so much better than the clunky Snake Eyes introduction of the title into the movie.
Yeah.
Is it's a malapropism. Like the Libya warlord says Lord of War.
Yeah.
And bath of blood as opposed to a bloodbath. Like he has his nice verbal tick throughout it.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, I prefer my version better whenever Cage tries to correct him.
Yeah.
And that warlord presents him, yeah, with these two amazingly attractive young women, but no condoms in the hotel somehow. Like, he knows that. In voiceover, we're told that.
Yeah.
And so Nick Cage doesn't know about hand stuff, so he avoids the prostitutes because of AIDS. Though he will have sex with other prostitutes elsewhere in the movie. But he does say in a really kind-hearted way that he, in a voiceover, that he always, whenever he makes love with his wife, he always acts like she's the only one.
What a sweetheart.
Really nice.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, Ken, are you taking notes for your vows?
Yes. You know what? Would have, thinking of Martin Scorsese, if there had been the condom thing had been a bit, he would have had the character knocking on doors, quick cuts, asking the guys downstairs. They would have shown him actually looking for a condom.
Yeah.
And then, you know, afterwards he'd be like, sorry, girls.
For sure.
That would have been great. And Scorsese could have done that probably in 15 seconds.
Yeah.
No, speaking of Scorsese, so there's a line in here in voiceover that Cage delivers. Cage's Yuri delivers, and he says that he never sold weapons to Osama bin Laden
because he's always bouncing checks.
Yes, great line.
But I was curious if that was like Bringing Out the Dead being set in the early 90s. Was that supposed to be like, we have this script, we have this movie that we're filming, we just want to make real sure that this character who you're supposed to kind of like and feel sorry for didn't have anything to do with 9/11.
Yeah, he put guns into the hands of children to shoot children, but Osama bin Laden, that was off limits. I think you're right, Thomas. That now, probably was
and
added.
I'm pretty sure he says that like in the 80s, which is would have been when the CIA was allegedly backing the Mujahideen against Russia.
No, so but that's in the movie. They're in Afghanistan part of the movie in the 80s, right? And that's when he in voiceover says...
Is that when he says that?
Yeah.
Okay. Like somehow he made sure that Osama didn't get it, but the other... never mind.
Yeah, it's...
It seemed like a very weird... Like the few times that this movie touches base with reality, especially like in a historical context, it's always very strange.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But speaking... Did you guys catch the cameo of Weston, not Preston, Coppola?
No. Nope.
Yes, I read that afterwards on the
trivia. Who? What? Wait, what? Who?
Weston.
Cameo? Who's Weston?
Cage's kid.
Coppola.
Oh. Right.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. He's the mechanic, right?
Yeah.
And
a little Russian mechanic. Who, in a very funny scene, they have to take apart the helicopters really quickly to make them look like civilian rescue helicopters.
In one of the, I think, the second Hawk interaction.
Yeah.
And then Hawk and his people are trying to follow him. He's escaping. Nicolas Cage's character buys a painting from his wife.
Oh, wait. Was this a Cage's on a Plane movie as well?
Yeah.
Or a pairing?
Oh, it could have been.
Yeah.
Because we're getting to the part where they go through his garbage and they have shredded paper in there, and Ethan Hawke magically puts the shredded paper together.
Yeah.
And finds like a flight manifest or something. So, yeah, they're in Africa, and one of the ships wants him to land, and then
ships.
You know, those planes. Flying ships.
Flying ships. Planes. Shut up.
You're like a medieval person who sees a plane. Or flying ship.
Or it could have been Paul Thomas Anderson's. The other Paul Anderson.
Paul W.S. Anderson.
Paul W.S. Anderson and Three Musketeers.
Yeah, the Leonardo da Vinci secret flying ships.
Yeah, three ships. Okay.
Yeah, we'll save that for our Paul W.S. Anderson podcast.
What's it called?
Oh, I have no idea. Don't make me do this.
Don't set up a...
Pod W.S. Anderson. I don't know.
Okay, that's not bad.
Paul W.S. podcast.
So instead of landing in an airport, they land on a road near a village, so the fighter jets, planes, can't land as well.
Buy him some time.
The guy who's landing doesn't want to, this Russian pilot, so he says, you're the shit? Is that what he says? Three times?
Yeah. You're the shit.
Which is improvised.
Very Cajun.
Yes.
I was wondering if that was improvised, because very Cajun.
Yeah. And then in the voiceover, we get that he came 42nd out of 43 in flight school, so he actually isn't that good.
That math doesn't really work, but yeah.
Yeah.
47 that's maybe out of 49.
That's a very writerly aside to put in there, because how would he know where he finished in flight school? Where was his flight school? The guy was like older than Nick Cage. He would have to go back to the Soviet Union to find out what flight school he went to. It would be in the Russian military. How would he have access to that?
Maybe he went back in time. Maybe this is also a Cage's out of time pairing.
Oh, okay.
Who knows?
Maybe the guy was really proud.
Yeah.
Landing the plane full of guns, he gives all the guns away to the natives. Ethan Hawke, who I don't know if this bugs you guys, but Ethan Hawke in two of his scenes is completely clean shaven, and then the other ones he has kind of that almost goatee, almost
the Ethan Hawke beard.
And these are,
I love the Ethan
Hawke
beard.
These are decades apart, right?
Yeah.
Like,
but he has the same hair.
Sure, because he was shooting Boyhood at the time.
Yeah, like 5 days once
and they
a
couldn't,
year.
They couldn't put
it
on him.
Anyway, we get all different. Ethan, maybe you're right. Maybe Ethan Hawke was documenting the time between meeting Nicolas Cage's character, and he grew a little bit of Ethan Hawke beard. How long do you think it takes for him just to grow that little bit of hair? Because it doesn't seem like he can grow a full beard.
No idea. I love Ethan Hawke, though.
I love Ethan Hawke, too. I mean no disrespect by talking about the Ethan Hawke goatee.
The Ethan Hawke goatee is a classic. I mean, everyone, you can just say those three words and everyone knows what you're talking about. And everyone has an opinion on it, too.
Yeah, if you go to your barber and you're getting a shave and say it.
They know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is one of the things that really bugs me about this movie is Ethan Hawke says he can hold him for 24 hours, so he handcuffs him and leaves him out in the desert. And I really think that shows a glaring problem with this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the only problem
it
with
makes
it
no sense.
Is that it has these great concepts and these great ideas, and it doesn't think them out all the way.
Right.
Because in a better movie, you would have Nicolas Cage, he'd be all sunburnt, he'd be dehydrated, he'd be almost starved to death. Where would he go to the bathroom? You know, it would be horrible. It'd be like torture. But in this, we just get a cool time lapse, and then he's sitting there looking exactly the same.
Or have one of the hundreds of people he just gave a bunch of weapons
exactly.
to come up and say, somebody from the village who was smart enough to figure out exactly what happened and would have some bolt cutters to cut his handcuffs
right, or
off.
Shoot the handcuffs.
I know, you got to shoot them. It's like 8mm. You just shoot those handcuffs
yeah.
off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really not as well.
Yeah, it was the, you're right, the concept And the cool thing about it was the time lapse of the overnight and the villagers taking apart the plane.
Which is a really amazing shot. And it's like, how did they do that? I have no idea.
But yeah, but it once you start thinking about it, it doesn't make any sense.
I still love this movie.
This is the part of the movie where Cage's supermodel wife is told by Ethan Hawke what he actually does.
And her parents were, like, killed by guns or something, so she hates them all of a sudden. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I just find it hard to believe that she was that isolated, that she had no idea.
Yeah.
And that she was surprised by it. Really forced conflict that I did not buy at all.
For sure.
So Cage swears off gun running.
For, like, 5 minutes.
In a great scene. I mean, it's a great scene, though, where he's, like, his whole reason for doing it isn't really for the family or anything else. It's just because he's good at it. And that line when he tells her that he's good at it,
yeah,
it's just, like, devastating. It's just very well delivered. Like, his whole being is in that statement. And then she goes on to talk about, like, how she was just born and was born pretty and wanted to be a good artist because she paints. Cage ends up buying one of her paintings through back channels that she doesn't know.
Yeah.
And she's excited. But it kind of deflates. Like, it wasn't, I think if in a real conversation with another human being, if you were like to say, like, this is really all that I'm about. And then somebody else is like, oh, let me talk about me for a little while.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's not very supportive.
There's no sense they had a relationship outside the confines of the scenes that we see in the movie.
Yeah, that's true.
But Cage is able to go on and, even though it's less profitable, do something else. We're not too sure what it is. Did you guys pick up? Like, he's
timber and oil.
Yeah, he was a Bible salesman.
Okay.
Bible salesman.
So he goes clean, and that pisses Hawk off.
Yeah.
Well, timber and oil isn't exactly clean. I mean, we've all read Industrial Society and its future, so.
Yeah. Kaczynski, if you're out there listening.
Yeah.
How?
He's a big fan.
How are you listening? You're not. You're...
He has access to a computer.
Yeah, why would he use it, though?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. So he is...
Then, it was his birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Ted.
Happy birthday, Ted.
Anyway.
So his wife tells him that the president of Liberia is coming up to the apartment.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if it was something that was pre-planned, because he acts like he's surprised, but the way she delivers it, it's like they were expecting him. I didn't get it.
Yep.
So he has an offer. Cage can't refuse. His son is there. One of the running gags of the story is the son asking if Cage can procure the gun from Rambo.
Yeah.
And then Cage is like, you mean First Blood, Rambo, First Blood Part 2, or Rambo 3? It's the one from the first one, First Blood. Great movie.
Great gun.
I wouldn't know.
I mean, I wouldn't either, it's cool.
It's a big gun. Yeah. So he's got to do it, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And he can't do it alone, though.
Yo, no, he can't, because he's only been doing world-altering arms deals for a decade and a half, but he needs to go back to his junky brother, who's supposedly clean and getting married and has gone straight.
He says he's clean as he's smoking a cigarette, which I thought was really funny.
Was he smoking in the kitchen? I can't remember.
Yes.
Yep.
It seemed like there was a few different health code violations in that kitchen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man. The fact that he can't do that in 2021.
Brother in arms. They gotta go.
Yep.
He needs somebody he can trust to watch his back.
Yeah. Excuse me. So they do the deal.
Speaking of.
Yeah.
Guys, this is, I guess, our third movie with a brother character for Cage's character.
Okay.
We have Moonstruck.
Yes. An
adaptation, of course.
Yes.
This would be the third one.
Oh. And his brother dies in all three of these, right?
No, not a Moonstruck.
Oh. Damn it.
But, I mean, odds are good that, yeah, 2 out of 3 times if you're Cage's brother.
Yeah, don't be Cage's brother. That's the lesson.
Yep.
Or even Jared Leto. Like, he doesn't really... Wait, did I say Jared? He doesn't really survive very often in the films that he's in.
No.
So prior to him going with Leto to Liberia to do this gun deal, his wife follows him because as he says in the narration, I don't know, people, I'm good at spotting tails, but not to the woman I'm married to, which makes no sense. I mean,
his wife has a tail.
She's in a limousine. A limousine is following him to the docks where he has his little shipping container full of guns.
Passports.
And she figures out the password. She's looking at his desk. What could it be? What could it be? I hate it when people figure out passwords.
Oh, yeah. It's like the worst part of Watchmen is the Ramses, the second book that's there. Oh. They type it in.
Yeah. Yeah. Apologies to anybody trying to figure out my password after I die. Because they're passphrases?
Oh, yeah. It's probably something like Everybody Lies or Nick Cave or Miles Davis Bitches Brew.
Ooh, that's a good one. But the I's would be ones and the E's would be threes.
No! Never figuring it out now. I don't want to look at your computer. I don't care.
Yeah, but it could have like the...
the last episode of the podcast.
Yes. And
I have to get it.
Yeah, because Bezos is going to NFT it. Give you like $30,000. It's worth more, Jeff, by the way.
I have no idea what an NFT is still.
It's a football league, but...
Really?
I think.
Anyway, Jared Leto gets blown up.
Yeah, Jared Leto has another crisis of conscience because he sees the deal isn't for Liberia, it's for Sudan. Is that right, Thomas?
I don't care.
I dropped out of geography.
Anyway, he gets a conscience again and he blows up, he hits the sun with the Rambo gun.
He blows up the sun?
He blows up the truck with some grenades and he gets killed. Anyway. He gets, Cage gets home, he's sad.
Yep.
His wife has turned him in.
In what I think is one of the...
Sierra Leone. I'm sorry, that I wrote it down. Stupid.
Who?
Sierra Leone.
Any relation to Sergio?
No, the guns weren't for the guy for Liberia at all. They were for him and his pals in Sierra Leone.
And we see a really great shot of the tents full of refugees, and there's a really great shot of... one of the tents splattered with blood, and then a hand pressed up against it.
It's a bit pretty much.
No, it's great. It's a bit much. This movie is so well shot. It's really good.
Okay, the cinematography is great.
Yeah.
I will say that for this movie. Well shot movie.
It has so many filters, every filter you would want. It's
not even just the way it looks, but like there's so many clever shots, and there's so much great framework, like the scene with the tanks going by and Nicolas Cage examining the AK, which is another really famous scene.
Mm-hmm. Or him sitting on the fallen statue of Lenin.
Yeah.
With a calculator.
That was great.
Anyway, the I don't know. He gets caught because one of the bullets didn't get pulled out of his brother's dead body. And then his wife had turned him in anyway, so it was kind of a moot point. And then Cage has his speech that he is important. And that Ethan Hawke doesn't have him.
So, Thomas, this is really important.
Are you listening, Thomas?
Half. Okay, peace out, guys.
Have you seen the television series Fargo?
No.
Damn it.
Shit.
Okay, well, you should.
The television series Watchmen, is that all right?
That is the worst show ever made of all time. That's like the Steven Spielberg of HBO series.
Oh, I don't know. The Nevers, I think, are making a pitch.
Hey, at least the Nevers is like something I don't care about. They ruined Watchmen.
All right.
Why'd you ask me about Fargo?
Okay, so first of all, watch it. It's amazing. It's one of the best shows ever. But season 3, which is my favorite season, not to spoil anything, but totally rips off the Ethan Hawke scene in Lord of War.
The end scene.
Almost... like word for word, it is so bizarre.
I turned over and said, "Is this Fargo?"
And I remembered saying that to you years ago. This is one of the conversations I vividly remember us having, which might have been in like some fever dream or something.
Huh.
Is that it totally rips off this last scene of Lord of War, which is like a really great scene, I think, with him and Ethan Hawke, right?
Yeah, it is, and you know,
it's pretty clever.
It is, and the best part of the movie is the. You know, Cage gets away because he knows too much.
Yeah.
And the end credits talk about the largest arms dealers as nations in the world. And then after that, it's they're also the five permanent members of the UN Security Force.
Yep. Classic.
The end.
So it makes its moral stance pretty clear there, yes. I think. There isn't any dancing around it.
Yeah, it's
Anyway, yeah. Despite talking for 45 minutes about all the issues I have with this movie, I love it. I think it's fucking amazing, and it's super entertaining, and yeah, I love everything about it, even the really ridiculous script that doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. If you want to watch something super interesting and fun that's around the same era, I would say Ghost Rider.
Mm. It could have been.
Like, that movie makes zero sense, but you're watching a movie that's supposed to make zero sense. It's not about gun running.
Isn't Sam Elliott in Ghost Rider?
Can we talk about Nicolas Cage in Lord of War? One of my first thoughts in seeing this was it's about as good as he has looked. I mean, he looks like he has the right maturity, but not, you know, old like in Left Behind. He looks like a movie star. His hair looks great. This might be the most commanding leading man look of any movie we've seen of him so far. Wait.
Which one did you watch? Which movie did you watch first?
Lord of War.
The pairing today.
Lord of War.
Oh, okay. Because next movie.
It's a shock.
It is.
It's sad.
Yeah. No, he seems. Yeah, he looks pretty good. Like he wears a suit well.
Yeah.
He does sad face really well.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just really good at being a sad person. Why he's a sad person, how he's good at his job, we don't really know.
Right.
Like, what's legal in his job and what's not legal and what's that gray area? No idea.
Yep. I was really surprised when Ethan Hawke, like, in their second meeting, I think, was like, oh, you're shipping these separately, so that's legal, I guess. And I was like, wait. Any of this is legal?
Yeah, you really can ship missiles?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. As long as it's separate?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I mean, that would be a nice condemnation of international weapons cells, right? Is to better understand like all these horrible things that are legal.
For sure.
Yeah.
War legal.
Has anybody ever seen the movie War Dogs?
The movie's too busy. No.
I haven't either.
Me either.
It seems of a similar bent of this movie.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more satirical.
I mean, I saw Traffic. Traffic was good.
Soderbergh.
I saw Blow. Blow was okay. This also reminds me of, like, Michael Bay. I kept thinking there was going to be, like, a Pain and Gain movie, which I like Pain and Gain a lot. And I thought but it doesn't go over the top. It doesn't really go comedic in a way that it's just this bad mix of too serious and, the serious subject matter that they're trying to be cool with. Ken,
yeah.
Would you weigh in?
On what?
Should people watch this film?
I am going to say, if you are a fan of Nicolas Cage, then yeah, I think you should watch it, because I think it's great to see him in that early 2000s era, really at the peak of, you know, being a leading man. And it's an interesting movie. It's not like it's boring or a trudge. I don't think it's successful, but oftentimes I find unsuccessful movies the most interesting. Yes, I would recommend Cage fans to watch it. If you're just a fan of really awesome films and you like Scorsese type docudramas with satire, then absolutely not, because you'll be disappointed.
This or Wicker Man?
From this day to the day I die, I guarantee you I will watch Wicker Man at least two or three more times and probably won't watch Lord of War again.
Wow.
How's that? Thomas, did we lose you? Did you hang up on us? Shit.
No. If I was going to hang up, it would have been 45 minutes ago, whenever Jack said he liked this movie. Yeah.
What did the Google users think?
BSC Cheese says, surprisingly good and enjoyable, particularly the ending and political twist, with Cage acting on behalf of the U.S. government and protected as its merchant of death.
Boop.
Chloe Williams gives it 5 stars. This movie is great and is a good concept spelled wrong. to life. So please watch it, and thank you. Have a good day. Thank you, Chloe. Crust gives it 4 stars. one of Nicolas Cage's most neutral performances, yet still a very good movie. Keegan Cowan, a year ago. This is probably the most dismal film I've viewed for a long time. Good to write a negative film review on, smiley face. William Ellis gives it 5 stars. I am a bean. Turned myself into a bean, I did. Became Bean Yoda, I did. Mmm. 2026 Aiden Winstead gives it 1 star. Boo! Get off the stage!
Wait, that's us. That's the live show that we're doing.
Oh, yeah. It's, actually, everybody at Tubby Tony's left once they realized that the game was turned off. So we are all alone under the tarp, in case anybody's wondering.
For sure.
Is that it?
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to go see if there's a line at the bathroom in the tattoo shop. So we'll take a bit of a break.
Yeah, let's take a mid-pause break.
Is this our vape break?
Yeah. Yes, vape break. Although you can vape underneath the tarpaulin outside here.
Vape Break is the name of our next podcast.
This place is great. They have, I think it's mimosas that come out of the bathroom sink. I'm hoping that's what this is.
Yeah, I wouldn't try and drink that.
Going for it.
You know you're still on mic. This is probably, so watch what you're doing in that bathroom. It might be like Leslie Nielsen and
Naked Gun.
Naked Gun 33 and a third, or whichever one it was.
It's the first one. I don't know why I know that. I actually just watched the first one a couple weeks ago. I was really bored.
I have a hankering to try. I tried to get that on the movie showing. There's going to be a Friday movie showing over at a friend whose name I won't mention right now on mic. But yeah, I was trying to get either that or one of the Wayans Brothers movies, one of their parody movies on.
Wait, which Wayans Brothers movie?
Like Don't Be a Menace to South Central or Scary Movie.
Oh, brother.
Or Scary Movie 2. I also thought about Scary Movie 3.
How many of those did they make?
I don't know. I know at least 3. I haven't seen any of them, but I have seen Don't Be a Menace to Society while sipping your
gin and juice
in South Central LA.
Never saw it. Jack's back.
Oh, there's five scary. There's at least 5 scary movies.
They made a few of them. They weren't all done by the Wayans brothers, though, right?
5 is. Let me see here. I'm going to look it up on the internet. Yeah, that directed by Malcolm D. Lee.
No. Jack's back.
Yo.
Before we get to Left Behind, I do have an update on our billboard in Ljubljana. So after it went up, if you remember, we had a billboard with ourselves and Nicolas Cage and Bright Smiles for Ljubljana of Slovenia's Best Teeth and Face dental clinic.
Yep.
And then they wanted us to people to kill Maribor's Great Smile and Pain dental clinic because they have a beef against each other. Anyway, it resulted in a lot of graffiti on the billboard. Really obscene graffiti on our faces. Very unpleasant. instead of taking it down, their solution has been to not paint over it, to let people put the obscene graffiti on it. And also, whoever painted that the graffiti by my face, I do have a big mouth, but it's not that big. So they're just going to slap on the address, and then they're going to keep painting over our teeth. So the only thing that's really going to be incandescent is going to be the white teeth. And their slogan is going to be about even through adversity, your teeth are still going to look great.
Right.
So if your idea of adversity is being surrounded by dozens of giant cartoon dicks, then it's the billboard's still up. Again, we still can't put it up on social media because of the call of death graffiti. Yeah, and the graffiti, of course.
Yeah.
It's very obscene. I showed it to you guys earlier.
For sure.
Yeah. Not cool. I've never seen usually with graffiti, they don't also show veins. That was pretty amazing. Like, they're pretty graphic. Like, they're very detailed.
You know how we should fix the situation?
How?
We should all post our addresses online.
What would that do?
I don't know. It would divert the terrorist action away from the billboard and to our houses.
Oh.
Well, Jack, I bet you're all for that. Yeah, exactly. Kid has one house. I have one house. Like, you could be safe like 365 days out of the year. Yeah. Some. Gosh, I almost fell for it.
you were about to tweet your address. Hovering over the button.
I have an update on our merchandise. I don't know if anybody listening has gone to our merch bar. The great t-shirts, and there's a few updates on some stuff that are being recalled. The pop-up rat that is supposed to go in your smock pocket from the Clint Eastwood seasons.
Yes.
Apparently people were using them to pop up in places that were considered rude and obscene. So we're no longer selling the rat in pockets.
God damn it.
And then the koozies, which we sold out all 2,500 like in a week. We had them made in Slovenia because we have a connect there. And the ink on our logo, when it's mixed with liquids, it's turning into hydrochloric acid. So we're recalling them. We've had a few burnt fingers, burnt lips. We're dealing with those as they come in. And also Alan and Sarah Westbrook of Avery, Pennsylvania. Your newborn shouldn't have been chewing on a beer koozie.
They shouldn't
to begin
be drinking
with.
At that age.
No. Yeah. So I'm going to fight that one. Left Behind. Thomas, you read the book, right?
Yeah, I did some research. I did read the book, the 25th anniversary edition, which the big difference between it and the prior version is
TikTok.
It is not justified alignment and smaller. So they originally they were like it looks like a regular paperback. Now, so maybe this would help people out. Left Behind is a evangelical telling of the end of times that takes place over multiple books.
16, right?
I believe so. They have sold, according to this cover, over 9 million copies, which Dianetics has sold over 22, but, you know, it's not a pissing contest.
Over 22 copies. Wow.
22 million. Thank you. Yeah. The Hunger Game books, by contrast, 25 to 35 million. So that gives a sense of where they sit. But no, they...
three of those were from me. I purchased all three of those books at one point. They were good.
Wait, so Dianetics?
Yes.
And Left Behind.
Yes.
And Hunger Games.
Hunger Games?
Yes.
Yeah, so the book came out in 95. It would be later made into a movie in 2000 by Kirk Cameron.
I watched it. And, did you watch it, Thomas?
I did.
Whew.
So there's I think it's not called Repause. What's it called? There's a great thrift store in Washington, in Vancouver, that the proceeds of their sales go towards helping rehome animals.
Yeah. Retails, right?
Okay. Yeah, retails.
Retails, that's what
love
it is.
That place.
Sense. Yeah, Tails being T-A-I-L-S, I believe.
Get it.
And there they were having a DVD sale, and so I bought all the Left Behind DVDs.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes, exactly. Jesus. I think if I bought 10, then it was only like $2 or something, so I had to get an extra few, and so yeah, I threw them in there, and I had finally had an opportunity to watch Left Behind 2, World at War, and I'm sorry, Tribulation Force and World War, and Left Behind World at War, which isn't 3. He just left off numbering it because they're not sure what's going to fall in the series.
Wow.
So what's interesting is that what we end up with the Cage film that came out in 2014, I believe, is a copy of a copy of a copy.
Uh-huh.
So you have your the book, which is the source material. Then you have the Kirk Cameron movies. And then what they wanted to do with the Cage movie was reduce it, tell a simpler story than the Kirk Cameron, and for a wider audience, a more general audience.
Yeah.
So you have the book as the source material, then you have the movie, and then that same production company, Cloud 10, there were some legal rights and different portions of it, but basically Paul Lalonde, or Lalonde, a Canadian-American film producer and writer who founded Cloud 10, would make Stony Lake his second company and make the Cage movie that we saw this week.
Shit.
So it's a it's a copy of a copy of a copy, unless you want to count the Book of Revelations, in which case it's a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. But that's getting a little
deep. That's pretty far in the Book of Revelations when they talk about the number of copies that would be made.
Yeah. but the book has a little bit of a like a Kirkman Walking Dead feel, because you don't quite know where it's going to go or what's going to happen. Outside of like, unless you've already been steeped in like the culture, which I was growing up. So, in the 25th anniversary, Jerry Jenkins, who was the fictional part of the two-person authorship of this book, Lim LaHaye providing a lot of the prophecy understandings from Revelation. Jerry Jenkins explains that he had about he went halfway through the manuscript of Left Behind, and he only got in 2 weeks into the 7 years of the novel that it's supposed to span.
Oh my God!
So it ended up becoming a 16-book. Series, including three prequels and a final sequel.
Wow.
So it's a long-spanning series.
So do the other ones post plane landing take place in this like awesome like apocalyptic world?
So for Left Behind, the Cameron version, it does not. It ends with the rise of the Antichrist.
Yeah. Very, very humorous Antichrist who's head of the UN.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's a documentary.
Yeah. So no, it's it's the same old bugaboos of the UN, one world, one currency, and everybody wanting you know, two acres of dirt in Israel.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's interesting about the book is that it's almost it's not set in the present day of 95. Like it's set a few months or years out, because they have at the time like something that's a little bit like the internet, where everybody can watch live streaming around the world the same event.
Yeah.
To be able to make some of the prophecies work. But also there's a miracle formula that's regrowing wheat in Israel and desert lands. And they've already reduced down to, I think, three currencies. So it doesn't really take place in the present day to be able to have all the other pieces work together.
Right. And the currency in the Book of Revelations, doesn't it say, I don't know if either of you guys will know the answer to this, but isn't the one currency like flesh? Like they'll replace the one currency with flesh at some point? Isn't that one of the...
Let me turn to my Bible here.
Okay. Because I know that's what evangelicals were saying with like the COVID vaccine and stuff, and like the barcodes. I don't know.
Well, the barcodes comes from, I think, there was an earlier late 70s
chick publications
film where people have, what's that?
It was also one of those chick publications. You know, the little card.
People got barcodes. And if you look at a barcode, the initial, middle, and final look like sixes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if you got a barcode on you, that's the mark of the beast.
Right.
Yeah. Because they were using Arabic numbers at the time.
Just like the monster, the energy drink logo is like the three sixes in like Hebrew or something.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Parks and Rec.
Can we talk about the 2014 Left Behind?
Oh, is that? Yeah. I thought we were doing completely different podcasts.
As I mentioned,
so
in,
did you guys watch it? Did you? Was this your first time watching it?
No. This is about number three, I think. Right.
This is the second time I've seen it.
Okay.
Oh wow! Do you have it on? Did you stream it, or do you have it on Blu-ray DVD?
Oh my bro Bezos gave us a deal, $3.99 to rent on Amazon Prime.
Okay, because I got the Blu-ray DVD, which means that there's both a Blu-ray and a DVD in the same package, which I don't really understood.
Old school.
I love those.
So if you get the Kirk Cameron version, there's music videos on the DVD.
Nice.
Did you watch them?
Oh, some of them, yeah. I had them on the background while I was cooking.
What were you making?
Oh, I don't recall.
Oh, man. Come on.
Dinner?
Wow, you really didn't do your research for this.
This is the saddest movie we've watched, and it's not because of the content. It's just because of Cage.
This is a really pathetic movie.
It's just
on every level.
After watching him in Lord of War, which he looks so great, he just looks... He looks old, like he doesn't give a shit. He doesn't, like in Mandy, a couple years after this, he looks great.
Yeah.
But in this movie, he just looks like, he's just not there.
Yeah.
It's a weird one after watching all these other Cage movies.
For sure.
Yeah, I said, like in my notes, I wrote down that he looks like, I said, is this Cage or is this his Musée Grévin, his... That it's a wax double. So there's wax museum in Paris that that has a Cage.
Right.
And I thought it might be his wax double on this because he hasn't looked this bad since like leaving Las Vegas when he intentionally ate greasy food and bloated out and was dying.
For sure.
Like, he looks, and I don't know, maybe it's just the lighting. I mean, lighting can do a lot of wonders.
He just obviously wasn't really that invested in the movie.
Yeah, this was a paycheck movie.
So if you haven't seen Left Behind...
what are you doing? Go watch it.
Most of the movie takes place on an airplane after a bunch of people rapture their ass out of there. It also has a storyline with Cage's daughter, who comes home from college... for Cage's birthday, but Cage is supposedly pulled away because he's a pilot with a porn name, Rayford Steele. And then at the airport, which apparently takes place before 9/11, she meets Chad Michael Murphy, who is having a argument with a holy Bible thumper. Chad Michael Murphy's beard in this movie.
This is not an Ethan Hawke.
No, it is the most...
it's a horrible beard.
Distracting, unconvincing beard in a motion picture, probably since Nicole Kidman. and then she finds out that Cage really didn't get called away at the last minute because a dude
the U2
on a
tickets.
Cart comes up and says, "Oh, I got the U2 tickets for tomorrow in London, where he's going." And she's like, and he's like, "Yeah, it took me 2 weeks to find it." And she's like, "Oh, it didn't. Really? He didn't really get called at the last minute." She's having a sad. Apparently the family, he meets her and she sees him canoodling with a stewardess. And
yeah, this stewardess who is so into Nicolas Cage.
Oh yeah. They basically cast a stripper as the stewardess.
It is insane.
It really quite funny as he tells her a joke and then you know, the old in the movie, she's like, laughing. The other steward is like, "Why are you laughing?" Says, "I'm just thinking of that joke Ray said."
I have a joke for you. What's the only thing worse than a stripper?
What?
An atheist stripper.
Ooh.
Okay. Chad Michael Murphy and Cage's daughter.
Sorry, wait 1 second. Ma'am, please don't leave. He wasn't talking about you.
Shit.
Lost her one audience member.
Yeah, she's been on her phone the entire time.
I don't know who you guys are talking about.
Do we need to take down the house lights?
We're all alone under the tarp. Not the first time. Chloe and Chad Michael Murphy or Buck engage in one of the least convincing meet cutes at the airport.
Yep.
Something that might. So there's actually stuff that happens in the book and even in the Kirk Cameron version.
Right, and it's kind of creepy.
In the book, they land on page 36 of 391 pages.
Yeah.
So all the airplane stuff's over, and Buck doesn't meet Chloe until page 304 of 391 pages.
Yeah, which is he meets her late in the movie, the Kirk Cameron movie too.
That is insane.
They clearly went for more of a Twilight Zone story of a group of people in a confined space and a weird supernatural event. Cage and Chloe's mom have been distanced the last year since Leia Thompson, who plays the mom, since her mom died. She's become very religious. Everybody's kind of annoyed at it. Chloe's been practicing what to tell her when she's coming home from college. She has a little brother who wears glasses and a baseball hat. Kind of looks like Jack did when he was a little kid. Sorry, Jack.
Oh, that's okay.
You wore a hat and had glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you were
into baseball?
He was not excited. He would not be excited by a baseball glove.
No, I was never into baseball.
Yes. What did you bring me from the airport? And she pulls out a baseball glove and he goes, "It's a new baseball glove like I've been asking for." Very convincing.
From the airport where you buy all your sporting goods.
Yeah, you can get cheap liquor. Yep. You can get sweatshirts and you can get baseball gloves.
Yep.
At the airport. And use books if you go to the airport.
But no Bibles. That really shows the state of the world.
Telling me. What happens after that?
Yeah, you were talking about Leia Thompson, who was from Howard the Duck and Back to the Future.
Yes.
We featured her on our Marvel-less pod series. Where we did all the superhero movies prior to X-Men 2000.
Yep. Howard the Duck.
So what superhero movies used to be like before the Marvel movies came about?
Mm-hmm.
Before Bryan Singer changed the face of them?
Well, and before Marvel started shooting in 4x4
Leah
green
Thompson's
screen rooms.
In the film for maybe 5 minutes at most?
If that.
Yeah.
And then she...
She's kind of like discount Winona Ryder.
Ooh, that's not bad.
Thank you.
So Chloe and little dumb shit kid go to takes her dad's car, and they go to the mall
because there's an 80% off sale at GameStop. Which, knowing GameStop, that has never happened.
Buy GameStop stock right now! I'm telling you guys.
And then at this.
The first time we get music with lyrics is like 30 minutes into the film when she's driving her brother to the mall. It's so,
And meanwhile, we're on the plane and we're introduced to a bunch of characters, kind of like Alex Haley's airport. And we know that they're going to be people we're stuck with for the next 2 hours.
You know what I thought was really interesting about this? I haven't noticed the other times or time I've watched it. I feel like I've seen it a million times, like Wicker Man, but it might have only been once and it just left a big impression on me. Is that the passengers on the plane that we were stuck with are all, what's it called? First class?
Yeah.
The people in the back of the plane are literally just there for background. There's one scene where an angry mob tries to kick down the door, but then they're just not in the rest of the movie. Isn't that really weird?
Yeah. It was at this point I wrote in big letters, you could see. I wrote just Rapture already.
It takes so long.
Yeah,
it's so annoying.
I had a bet with my wife while we're watching it, like, how long do you think it's going to be until the Rapture finally happens? Because they keep cutting back, and this is going to be the format of the whole movie. So in the book, they cut back and forth between Buck and Steele, between the reporter and the pilot.
Right.
It alternates back and forth their scenes. In the movie, fortunately, like, it's not just two white dudes, you know, you do get the daughter, and just going back and forth between Cage and the daughter, and they have nothing to do before the Rapture happens, and they have nothing to do after the Rapture happens.
It really is one of the most boring movies ever made. Like, it's almost intentionally boring.
It's like My Dinner with Andre, if they put it on a plane. And they weren't able to have dialogue.
Okay.
My Dinner with Andre is one of my favorite movies of all time.
You have the action figures, we know.
I forgot. I wrote down a number of song titles from U2 that have stuff to do with the story, and I haven't been deploying them in my recap. I apologize.
Well, so I was going to offer our listener, because some of my friends are listening to U2 and they're trying to do something interesting musically with it, but I don't know anything about it. If they write in to us with their suggestions for the best U2 song to finish this film with, I will send them my underlined dog-eared copy of Left Behind and or my spare DVD from the Left Behind Nicolas Cage or my 3 Kirk Cameron movies. Or maybe all of it.
What a prize.
It's really good. Well, it's really good. You too can be left behind.
Okay. Well, I mean, I have a few. Do I get...
You can't write in. You can't be part of the contest. The contest excludes people over 6'3".
Since I already wrote these down, then whoever for our listener, you cannot use these songs.
All right, go ahead.
Until the end of the world. Mysterious Ways. Last Night on Earth. Even Better Than the Real Thing. Elevation. Desire. Bullet the Blue Sky, Beautiful Day. Can't use them.
I've never listened to U2 in my life.
Those are all song titles.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you... Wait, is this like a Russian roulette thing where like one of those is a made-up U2 song and I have to guess?
I should have done that. That
oh, man. God damn it. We'll do that for our U2 podcast.
Yeah. So after the rapture... everybody disappears and leaves their clothes behind. And every child. She's at the mall. It's pandemonium. She runs out in the parking lot. Everybody's going crazy.
There's a car crash.
And then there's also a plane crash. She's about to get in her car in a little 2-seat plane, which apparently has been flying around for 20 minutes without a pilot.
Yeah.
I don't really understand the length of time between the rapture and stuff that's continually crashing like an hour later.
Yeah.
Like the school bus.
Was that a born again flying the plane or a child? We don't know.
Yeah. Oh, so I had another U2 thing. After the plane crashes in the car, Daddy's going to pay for your crash car. U2 song title.
Is that real?
I'm glad one of us knows something about U2.
Yeah, I know nothing about U2. Is Bono from U2?
Boner? Yeah.
Bono.
Boner.
Whatever.
Yeah, he's from U2.
Okay.
So this movie compared to the Kirk Cameron one, they play off the chaos for Chloe after the rapture and the chaos on the plane.
Kirk Cameron, you have, and 24 minutes into the film, I did a time check. You're on the plane, and at minute 33, he's bucks back inside the airport.
Yeah. There's nothing about what people on the plane were thinking or doing.
Yeah.
I don't know if
and
it's
in
to
the
this
book,
movie's
the rapture
benefit
happens
or not.
At 11 o'clock Eastern time.
Okay.
So both the movies change that so they could show you a little bit of people being really sad. But the idea is that like it happens late enough at night that some people don't even know until the next morning.
Wouldn't you hear like the explosions and scream and dogs barking? Dogs don't get raptured. Apparently.
Hey! If you're in Vancouver, Washington, who knows who's actually going to go?
Yeah, it could have happened last week, and we actually wouldn't know.
Yeah.
So the people
another really crazy thing. We're talking about the kids going in the book. There's a woman who's pregnant, and she gives birth to just the afterbirth and the placenta.
Ugh!
When the rapture happens. Yeah.
Oh, that was one of the questions I had.
That's kind of gross.
That's sitting around thinking about things that would happen.
Yeah, no, this is one of those, like, cool concepts, or,
let's not give it too much credit.
Yeah, but if you really think about it, none of this makes any sense.
Yeah, but the central conceit of people disappearing is a classic putting the reader or the viewer in the situation of what would I do in right. that situation, which is anytime you're asking a reader or viewer to ask that question.
I'd probably hightail it to that GameStop 80% off sale.
Are we secretly sponsored by GameStop? To that point, we're with first class flyers, people in first class,
including British Lady Gaga, who's doing a lot of drugs.
Yeah. So we have that composition for like trying to answer that as viewers. And then we have Chloe trying to survive on the ground.
Yeah.
Looking for her brother.
Yeah.
And
on the plane, who do we have on the plane? We have
short guy.
We have, a little person. We have, who's full of attitude.
Yeah.
Actually quite funny.
Chip on his shoulder.
He is pretty funny.
Yeah. It's a small
He tells
chip.
That little girl, he's like, how do you, what does he say? Something like, I bet you were asking questions like, how does he use a urinal? What, how does he get his clothes? Does he, and then the little girl says really innocently, like, what's a urinal?
Yeah.
Which, having watched Eyes Wide Shut last night, I was wondering if Tom Cruise ever gets asked the same questions. Some dude.
Well, we have shut. Made two Tom Cruise jokes in this episode.
I know. Well, the Kidman one was better. During Eyes Wide Shut, someone bumps into there's these like gang of asshole teenagers, late teens, like walking down the street, and they bump into Tom Cruise, and they're saying really horrible homophobic things to him. But one of them says, I got dumps bigger than you.
That's pretty good.
Which I thought would be, I would love to have been that actor to deliver that.
Pretty good.
Mm.
But back on the plane, we have a little person. We have a drug addict from Britain, which we're going to London, but there's only like one British person on the plane.
We have a Muslim guy. We have a Alzheimer's drenched older couple.
Woman, yeah.
Who only one of them goes to heaven for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then wife or baby mama of a... football star. It seems like maybe they're estranged. Like maybe they are married, but estranged.
Yeah, the
freaks
Jets
out,
player
has an air marshal's gun and thinks that it's all a big prank.
You know, the air marshal rapturing is a pretty ridiculous plot point. Let's be honest.
Oh yeah, there was also super smart conspiracy theory guy, and then
oh yeah,
there was also a Texan. Thomas,
he's a business person. He does business transactions.
Okay.
Yeah, how was his accent?
Yeah.
I think that guy's really from the South. He's a character actor. He's been in everything.
And then you have the stewardess who has the hots for Cage.
Yeah. And really likes you too, apparently.
Yeah. And
she likes Thomas.
Pilot. Yeah, she likes me and Cage.
Yeah.
But so as a microcosm of society, it doesn't really play out very well.
No. Rod Serling would take one look at it and go, guys, I'm going to go smoke a pack of cigarettes and rewrite this whole shit. And then come back with something better.
I'm going to give this to Stephen King. We'll do the Langley Years or something.
Well, someone else will do the ending at least.
So, if it was Sterling? Yeah.
Stephen King is like the Steven Spielberg of books, in my opinion. Dolan's Cadillac is pretty good, though.
You know, when Chloe goes home and her mom's been running the fucking water for hours, apparently, and all that's left are her earrings, a necklace, and ring. I mean, do you shower with your earrings on? I don't know. I haven't had an earring for like 30 years, so I don't know.
I don't. In fact, I actually haven't worn mine in like a week and a half because I forgot.
Oh, so next time you put it in, there's going to be blood.
That's yeah, fine. There will be blood.
So Chloe gets mad and throws a Bible out the window. It's pretty cool.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I must have been checking my emails.
So the great part is when Cage tells the stripper stewardess to look through the raptured stewardess's stuff. Or bring it to him because he's looking for things that explain.
And you think, oh, there's going to be a cross or maybe a Bible or something, but no. Even better.
It's her date book, and in big letters, Bible study on Thursday.
So funny.
It would be crazy if, like, the next page was, like, experimental drug. Teleportation lessons. How to turn invisible. Like, oh, man, back to square one. Because, yeah, the only, you have the conspiracy theory dude who's talking about how jets fly fat, like the government's found a way to make jets fly really fast. But yeah, you don't really have any. Here's the thing. It's if you're in a zombie movie, I'm sorry, if zombies broke out today, I would try and shoot them in the brain, right? Like take off their head.
Yeah.
Not because I know that that's legit, but because I've seen zombie movies. I live in a world where zombie movies exist. And it seems like, and this late, like after this many books have come out, after these many movies have come out, that the rapture is part of, you have the leftovers, right? Like you have like an understanding that this could happen. That, yeah, the first thing you should probably be thinking of when you're also thinking about aliens is maybe the rapture happened.
For sure.
And nobody treats it with, like, it's just like this weird false reluctance to believe.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it just doesn't,
in the logic of the movie, people should, they should be like, oh, probably the first thing we should think about is the rapture.
I don't think, I think speaking of zombie movies, I feel like the word rapture isn't said in this movie, or if it is, it's like really far in, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of religious stuff in the starting, just in case you were wondering if there was going to be any in this movie.
And morally, yeah. This takes the same stance as something like City of Angels, where it's like, oh man, look at how lost the world is. People just don't believe in God anymore, you know?
Yeah, it's trying to thread that needle where it's benign, culturally acceptable spiritualism, and not really a specific arm of a really toxic religious sect.
Yeah, I mean,
no offense, if that's your beliefs, you're cool. Don't, I'm not judging anybody.
Unless you're a Mormon.
Are you a Jack Mormon? That's somebody who's left the LDS. But unlike City of Angels, it's a little bit less oddly new agey in the sense that, like, you do definitely have a Christian intent, but yeah, there is no Antichrist. Like, that's why they probably cut the Antichrist out, right?
Yeah, that would be for the next movie.
I had this bet going with my wife. Do you think Cage is going to pray in this film? And he doesn't.
No.
But he does. His character arc is the most ridiculous, flat, A to Z, like, uninteresting thing where...
His daughter gets all the good character arc stuff.
Right, but he's like, you know, he thinks his wife is crazy on some level, and the rapture happens, and then immediately he's like, oh, it must have been God.
Well, yeah, he doesn't even start out as a real cad, because it intimates that he has not consummated it with the stripper stewardess, but they were going to canoodle at the U2 concert,
right,
and consummate it. So he's not, he doesn't even go into the has cheated, it's like thinking of it.
That's where you're wrong.
I am?
If you have those thoughts, then you've done it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for real.
So his daughter thinks that everybody's dead, so she goes up on the top of a bridge. And there's a few shots where it's the actual actress on the bridge. So kudos to you, actress whose name I will never remember. And this is...
This would be a great pairing with Hardcore Henry.
Cage finds the U2 tickets, and his daughter had written something on it. And if you are not a U2...
It's the saddest day of my life, is what she wrote.
And that's clearly referencing a U2 song.
Which one?
This is the saddest day of my life. It's about the day...
Because you're listening to
U2.
It's the day, it's about Bonner's mom dying. I just made that up.
What? Wait, what?
That's not a real song.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Podcast over.
Saddest day of my life is when Apple forced that stupid fucking U2 album on my phone.
Saddest day of my life is when I found out who U2 was.
So she gets some elevation there on the bridge, and she finally gets a hold of, our Buck finally gets a hold of her, and she finds out her dad's alive right before she's about to jump. Anyway, They're running out of fuel because they crashed into a raptured plane and blah, blah,
Pretty cool sequence. I've always thought the plane crashing into each other, that sequence is pretty well done.
Yeah, it's pretty tense.
I don't know. How big is the sky? I know there are
That's
flats,
true.
But how big is the sky?
That's true.
Like, it... It's unnecessary. It's not in the. It's not in the book. It's not. I don't like it.
Oh my god!
Like what's in the book?
Okay, so
they cut all of Thomas's favorite.
So
parts.
She has to find a place for them to land because all the airports are jammed with all the raptured planes, and she finds a road, a street with no name, YouTube, out by the mall, and she has to light some flames and clear everything for the plane to land.
It's basically like a quest in like a video game or something.
Yes.
But
80% off sale at GameStop.
The cutscenes with better CGI than that plane landing.
Yeah. Whoa, man, that is some bad CGI. That's like a Dire Straits Money for Nothing level computer animation.
But Chloe, I mean, I like that Chloe has some agency, that she, like, after she decides not to kill herself or become an angel, however that works, she goes down and gets on a motorcycle, like, as a badass, right? She's riding around with no helmet and no jacket.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking there was going to be this moment where she just, like, spreads her arms out and lets her, like, the sun hit her face and, yeah, hit a very slow-moving logging truck.
I did carefully framed shots of her on the motorcycle where her face is nowhere near the camera angle in like at least
For
10
sure.
different shots.
But she, I mean, she kicks ass. I mean, she's like, girls get it done or women get it done, whatever that slogan is in construction. Where she can't move the steam, like she gets on the steamroller and she's trying to move all the construction equipment out of the way. And then she realizes the steamroller moves at a glacial speed. So she like rigs up some type of belt, around it so they could and presses down the gas so it's going while she's moving other stuff out of the way.
She's clearly set up as the lead for a series of movies where she's like the hero who does the most. At least she does the most in this movie.
Right.
And then everything lands, the plane lands, there's lots of flames and they jump out.
And then they look at the cityscape on fire. And in the plane,
as
10 minutes earlier,
it's fine.
There was one bit of fire, which is how they saw where to land.
Because she lit the fire.
If the entire city was on fire, there's no way they would have been able to see it.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. So then Cage decides to break up with the stewardess by telling her, I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
Which is God.
Which is God.
So I have a crazy theory about this movie. I want you guys to... I wrote it down on my napkin.
So the question that goes unanswered is, did you two in this universe get raptured or not?
And yes. Are they able to go to that concert? Is the question that I had.
Which band member do you think is least likely
I don't
to
know
have been
who
raptured?
I don't know anything about them. Bono. Is that one of them?
Yeah, that's the lead singer.
Doesn't one of the people play guitar and have a name that's like a noun?
Yeah.
Word?
What's that? The Edge.
Edge. Okay. The Edge.
Oh, the Edge.
Yeah. The last name Edge.
Yeah.
The Beyonce.
When you meet him, you have to say hello, The Edge. It's very awkward.
Right.
Anyway. There's a nursery scene where Chloe runs in because she's looking for her brother at the hospital, even though he just raptured in front of her.
Because that's where he would be.
They do that so they can show that all the babies are gone. And I was really hoping that they would cut to a scene in Arizona with maybe a state correctional officer and an ex-con. So many babies around them.
What did you do, H.I.?
I'm afraid for your question, Jack.
Oh, no, I have a crazy theory.
Oh, you have a theory. Okay.
So this is secretly, like, the best, like... atheist or like anti-evangelical movie ever made, and I think that like Nicolas Cage's character is a representation of like God, and that the God in this universe is actually really merciless and evil and is using all these people like just for his own amusement. And Nicolas Cage is in the sky, God in the sky, and he has control of all these people's lives, whether they live or die.
Wow, so God's not his co-pilot, he's just his pilot.
Yes.
God is my pilot.
Yes. Precisely.
Huh.
I had more evidence about this theory, but I forgot to write it down on the napkin, so I forgot it.
Yeah.
But
this is the fourth movie that we've watched so far in our 20 movie spread. So 4 out of 16, this is the fourth movie with breakdancing.
Ooh.
Oh, boy. And what number are we on car crashes?
Oh, it's too large to calculate. I don't know if the last movie counts or not. Lord of War, because there was no real... I don't remember there being a car crash.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. The truck blows up. I don't think that counts.
The car blows up. That doesn't count.
Car... Ah! That's a car accident.
Nah.
I don't know.
It's not like... It's not the driving of the car, which would turn us...
Right. Away. Yeah, I think the driving is the criteria.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry we made you watch all those Left Behind movies and read the book, Thomas.
Oh, no. You should be apologizing about Lord of War. I did not like Lord of War. I did not mind watching all of these movies compared to Lord of War.
Wow.
Are there Google reviews for Left Behind?
Yes,
so that's going to be the crazy thing, is that this movie tried to maybe have it both ways and did poorly with both audiences, is my understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cage in this movie, man, he just looks so...
He's in that...
Tired and...
He's really in, like, the worst era of Cage, where he's in between being in, like, those National Treasure movies and whatever, and having that resurgence that he's had recently post-Mandy, where he's in, like, a lot of cool projects that he's really passionate about.
Yeah, he's like a cult figure now.
Yeah.
And people make podcasts about him.
Yeah.
This was not the podcast era of Cage.
No. This was the tired era.
So I kept trying to figure out why he did the movie.
Yeah, it's probably a pretty quick answer to that, I would imagine.
Well, his brother Mark's a pastor. And he
a pastor like where cows eat?
It's a weird family.
Do you like a preacher better?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. He makes his money through spreading the Christian word. And, he asked him to do it. And apparently there was money involved that also asked him to do it. So he did it.
Well, you know, the family element, I'll give it a pass.
Yeah. Okay. I guess here's my question as I was watching it and watching the other films about... Christian actors, because even the Muslim guy on the plane is a Christian. If you listen, you can listen to on the DVD, if you write in and let me know what the YouTube song should be that ends this film, where they're all holding hands, looking out. It's Cage, reporter Buck, and daughter Chloe holding hands, even though Cage and Buck and Chloe all just... Like, Bucks doesn't belong in that group or that.
No.
She runs up to him. Chloe runs up to him.
Oh, I know. That's hilarious. She runs up to him first.
She knows. She's known him for 15 minutes, maybe an hour, like 8 hours ago, however long this movie lasts from when she gets. Yeah, it makes no sense. But the question I have is, and I think it cuts both ways, is acting the least Christian thing, because you're like putting on appearances and you're being deceitful, which would explain, like, okay, if you're a bad actor in this film, then you're a good Christian. Yeah. It's the most Christian thing, because then you can really empathize and understand other people. You can really put yourself in other people's positions and understand agape or love, right? And I don't know the answer to that, but Cage, definitely the latter.
For sure.
He seems to be a great actor because he seems to understand and live within other people's worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
my Google
that.
Review.
All right.
Great.
Do we have any more?
And that's why Nick Cage is the greatest actor of all time, in my opinion.
Yes.
Google reviews. Marco Polo says, I couldn't get halfway. Why, Nicholas? Why? Latchland RBLX says, one rotten tomato, smiley face. Anonymous user says, terrible film, don't bother. But if you notice, their profile picture is literally the UN logo. So that person is the Antichrist.
Shit.
Oh, yeah. It's like Satan on the poster saying, whatever you do, don't bring an unbeliever to this movie.
Yeah. Student Gerald Bates. This will happen one day when Jesus comes back.
Cage will fly a plane? Okay.
Yeah. Con Air sequel. Jane Miley says, did the cast just need the $?
Well, need and want are two different things.
It's Christianity for you. Aileen Brunery, 1 star. Why, Chad? Why this movie? Why?
Is she talking about the beard?
Yes.
What is up with Chad Michael Murphy? Murray's beard?
How about another joke, Murray?
Yeah.
Hell Knight number 1 says, don't watch it. Hate it. Middle finger. Chad Folks says, it's the truth. It's what's going to happen.
Nicolas Cage is going to fly a plane.
Plato says, I personally like beans. Another bean review on one of these movies. I wonder what that means. NH Guns and Ammo, who I'm pretty sure has left a review on a Clint Eastwood movie before, said Poopy Pants McGee. Yep, that's it.
So Ken, I'm sure you've used this service before. It's parentspreviews.com.
Yeah.
I understand whether or not it would be as appropriate for your children before they watch it.
Uh-huh.
There was a parent movie review by Carrie Bennett. Carrie, I think, is the male spelling of that name. And gave it a thumbs down. And violence? There is so much violence. People loot stores. I'm just reading some of the things that they captured here. People loot stores, steal and snatch purses. A store owner shoots a man who's trying to steal from him. A woman pulls a gun on fellow passengers and then threatens to kill herself. Huge explosions occur when a plane lands. The city's skyline burns. All that sounds kind of awesome. I don't remember. I mean, all that, I guess, happened in the film. I just don't remember it.
Yeah, that makes it sound like a much better movie.
Impactful. Oh, yeah. Sexual content? Some brief scenes of kissing and embracing are shown. Some female characters wear low-cut blouses. Adultery is alluded to.
Oh my god.
It is. It is alluded to.
The language? Language? The script includes a limited use of profanities.
Hmm. Yeah.
Alcohol drug use. An addict thinks she's having a bad trip. It takes more legal drugs. So yeah.
Those classic bad cocaine trips.
Yeah. Or whatever else she was taking. Or heroin, because she was...
Yeah,
she was on all kinds of drugs.
For sure.
Yeah, as far as foul language, U2 is invoked at least 3 times. So, very foul.
Send these foul beasts to the abyss.
Yeah,
that's one Josie Wales.
My favorite U2 album.
Yeah.
Thomas, do you have a Donald Kaufman ending for either of these movies?
Yeah, which one would you like?
Lord of
behind.
War.
Fuck.
Shit. Both.
Okay, so Lord of War. We can go back to that kitchen scene where Leto's clean, right? Like, he's given up on the drugs, but Cage comes to him and is like, I need you, right? Brothers in arms. Like, we just need to, I need someone to watch my back. Okay, so we're back to that scene. We're going to start from there because we just need to really punch up the ending. So Cage comes to Leto in the kitchen. We cut from there, but we still hear audio from the kitchen as Leto says, no, not brother in arms. So we track back and up from some carpet. Okay. We see high heels and some nice legs. And they keep moving and we keep moving back and we realize it's Leto in red hose and a cheap fur coat and sunglasses coming through the airport. Cage in a suit and a briefcase, right? He's just like, he's amazed. He says, you look amazing. What a disguise. And Leto says, no disguise. And Cage says, oh, I understand, sister. Leto looks away and coughs. And Cage says, what is it? And Leto says, I have AIDS.
Oh, my God.
But the U.S. won't let me import the unproven Mexican cocktail of drugs that can cure me. If only we had one way of getting into the States. And Cage to himself kind of mutters, and maybe even voiceover, distribution, smuggling. Then the camera is on Cage's back, but it's zooming in. He turns around, he looks down the barrel, and he says, there are over 38 million people in the globe infected with HIV. 1.8 million of those are children. The only question is, how do we get him to live a little longer?
That is amazing.
Little Dust Up Buyers Club.
Yeah. And you have a Donald Kaufman ending for Left Behind?
Sure. The captain, Steele, who's played by Cage, you have the journalist, you have the daughter, and they're all holding hands at the end. And you're expecting the credits to come up, right? Like, they're like, oh, we got 7 more years of this or something, right?
Yeah.
But the credits don't come up. It just lingers on them for a little while. And people start to look up to the sky. And you're starting to see, like, these lights. And you're thinking, oh, shit, it's like heaven or something, right? These rays from heaven. But instead, they're looking up, and instead of angels, it's UFOs. And you're thinking, wait, okay, is this that movie directed by the best director of all time and Tom Cruise, World of Worlds?
Oh, my God.
And you're like, no. No, it's more like a different movie by the best director of all times. It's Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Aliens come down. They land, right? They have that music and the lights, and it's kind of like a Game of Simon. And the lights, they transport down this humanoid figure who walks out. And they speak a language, but, you know, you can't understand it. It's some weird language. It's some jibber-jabber, maybe like Klingon or something. But you just you can't really understand it. They say something else. Still can't understand it. And all of a sudden, they say something else, and you can hear it. It's like anguish. It sounds really sad. And they repeat it one more time, and this time it's in English, and they say, who stole our children?
Is it knowing?
Well, we don't know. That's where it ends.
Whoa, yo, that's like the ending of... As well. Have you seen Knowing with Nicolas Cage?
No.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
Thomas, that's so weird, because that's literally what happens in that movie.
That's crazy.
It's literally sorry, spoilers, I guess, but it's not very good.
I have an ending for Left Behind.
Okay.
Please.
It's exactly the same as the plane is landing. It looks like they're going to be successful. And then it skids to a stop next to that curiously parked propane tanker. And it's like, it's not going to hit it. And then the plane jerks forward. It explodes. Just as it explodes, Nicolas Cage wakes up, and he's in the plane. They're ready for takeoff. And then his co-pilot's like, hey, buddy, you okay? And he goes, yeah, it's just got a weird sense of deja vu from that dream. And then as they prepare for takeoff, the credits roll, and the U2 song, Stuck in a Moment You Can't Get Out of, plays over the credits. The end.
Wow.
Oh, man. Did you just really want my Left Behind DVDs and books? All you had to do was ask, Ken. We didn't have to do this whole contest just for you to win.
I really want them, Thomas.
Knowing another Nicolas Cage plane crash movie and a car crash in that film.
Wow, that's like the whole package.
List of 20.
But not on our list because it's not that good.
So well, on our list of 20, we only have a few remaining.
We're down the final four. They kind of picked themselves since we're doing Raising Arizona and Mandy for the last one, right?
Yes.
So except, wait, what are the next two? It's Con Air and
Face Off.
What? Wait. That's, you would think so, but nothing in our rules. And I went back and I looked at our bylaws. Prevents us from watching a film again. So I'm going to propose 8mm and City of Angels for our next pairing.
Oh, God. Who's punching it out in the ring this round?
Thomas is supposed to pick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit. I can't.
So it's you and me arguing.
Yeah.
I can't pitch.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going Con Air and Face Off. Cage. Prime Cage.
Con Air and Face Off.
It's actually the name of the episode's Prime Cage.
Okay.
How about Primal Cage?
Primal Cage. That's the name of the episode.
Okay. I'm going to go... Primal Fear and what's a movie that has the word cage in it?
What's a movie with the word cage
in it? La Cage aux Folles?
Yes. That's my pairing.
Okay, neither of those are Nicolas Cage movies, so we're getting pretty far afield.
Yeah, Primal Cage.
Primal Cage.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
All right. Sounds good. Is that it? Are we done? It seems like we just started.
It's only like we've been going for almost 2 hours.
Oh, we're going to do an hour episode next time.
No way.
30 minutes a movie.
No
yeah,
way.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your guys' favorite end of the world movie?
Huh.
That's a really good question.
Besides Road Warrior, which is the best. just the opposite.
Okay, so besides Road Warrior, I'm a big fan of The Quiet Man. You ever seen The Quiet Man, Thomas?
I don't think so.
Little New Zealand film from the 1980s where everybody on the planet disappears or dies except one guy. And then, of course, the movie meets a couple other people.
Spoilers. That sounds good.
It is, yeah.
Okay, Thomas?
I don't know. I'm like everything's competing with themselves, like Omega Man. Let me think. I mean, I really like George Romero a lot. I'm just gonna go with Dawn of the Dead.
Good one. Okay. Jack?
It might be his best film.
Oh, undoubtedly. My favorite anyway. Favorite end of the world movie.
You, Jack? You got a favorite one? Excluding, of course, Left Behind.
Yeah, objectively the best. How about turning on the news?
Cable TV.
No, probably Stalker.
Okay, that's a good one. Hey, I have a question. Why do they call them Jack Mormons? How come there aren't Jack Christians, Jack Muslims? Why is it just Mormonism?
I'm going to do the Tim Whatley thing and convert to all those so I can invent it.
Okay. All right.
If he gets Polish citizenship, he'll be unstoppable.
So let's thank the Howling Fantods for the theme song.
Yes.
The best theme song ever.
Yep.
Let's thank the live crowd, live studio audience.
Tubby Tonys.
Woo!
Oh, those nachos don't look like they're doing too well with that guy.
I thought the podcast lore was that this place was evacuated or something.
Yeah, he's quietly been in the back with his face down in his nachos for the past 2 hours.
Maybe he's dead.
It's pretty much everybody's response to listening to this podcast.
For sure.
Social media.
At The Good, The Pod, and The Ugly on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube.
LinkedIn. You can find us on Patreon.
Facebook.
Parler. We're everywhere.
Telegram.
If you want, leave a comment on our billboard.
Yeah. In Ljubljana, Slovenia. Add us on our billboard.
Yep.
And then we'll be back soon.
Anything else?
Just if we roll the music.
Yeah,
I'll kill the music to start, like, right now.
No. How about right now?
It's fading in.
You know who's going to inherit the earth? Arms dealers, because everybody else is too busy killing each other. That's the secret to survival. Never go to war, especially with yourself.
That's a great movie, and you're wrong.
It's a shit movie.
No, it's so good.
All right.
Play us out.
Bye. Me and Pena made it out of the World Trade, and I saw the colors out of space.
Acting my way out of bankruptcy. But now millennials say they love me. Say who else could play exotic?